It seems like only yesterday that as a nation we came to a standstill by what happened, if you can remember, in the Amish school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then before that, Columbine. And then before that, Oklahoma City. And the series of killings in the schoolhouses across the nation, which have followed ever since. Since then, such atrocities have become common occurrence to us. One columnist has written that we as a nation and as a people have gotten past being shocked, maybe saddened and horrified, but not shocked by what goes on. As a nation, we have become numb to such atrocities and have even come to expect them. So when there was just a couple killed this week and didn't even hardly make the news. Day after day, we hear about murders, not just in war-torn areas, but within our cities, towns, and countryside across the nation. Violent crimes and murder, no less mass murders, have become almost commonplace. More people are murdered every day than the average daily loss of life in that casualty prone war, the Vietnam War. The sad thing is that most of these murders are taken for granted as just a part of our lives. We see them as a way of life and give them little thought. That is until they cross the line and enter what we feel to be safe havens, and when innocent victims may be the target. And that is when we become horrified and suddenly we ask, why? Our children and young people are faced with the frightening fact that such violence is a part of their lives, and they could face being victimized themselves. It is frightening to realize that they too will eventually become numb to such violence and to the continued devaluation of life. And in and through it all, whether it be with children, young people, or adults, or whether we have become numb to them or shocked by them, the common question which results is ultimately, why? Why? Then we go further and ask, why does God let this happen? To take it one step further is to ask the question, why does God allow evil in his creation? And then we may even begin to ask, and this becomes sad, what is evil? Sometimes we get to the point of not even know what is evil. We see the results of evil in our streets and throughout our country and call such evil acts. But what is there in life which produces evil? God? The devil? Tragically, We may be beginning to accept and just overlook evil. Maybe it is time to trace the roots of evil in our Judeo-Christian and even Islamic traditions. It's gone. The ancients must have asked the same questions and found the answer in their very concept, the nature of God as good, and the creation of the universe and mankind as God's making. In the creation story, after each of the first 5 days, God observed what he created and determined that it was good, since God could only create goodness. And God saw it was good. And then the sixth day, he created mankind. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. Therefore, all that he created was good. No concept of evil. We are told that he created mankind in his own image. The question then is, does this mean that mankind has the goodness of God? The answer is yes. But there is more to it. In this image of God, there is also the ultimate freedom to choose just as God has such freedom. If there is only good, then there is no reason to have the freedom of choice, for there is nothing to choose between. In fact, there can be no real understanding of good. The knowledge of good becomes meaningless since there is nothing there in order to compare it with. Therefore, there can be no separation between God and man, and good is totally irrelevant since there is only good. Good is encompassed into one's total being, or is life itself. Therefore, to have the knowledge of good, you must have the opposite, or what it means to have the absence of good. This is evil. God then can only be understood in the presence of evil, and evil can only have a meaning in relationship to good. Free will, or the freedom of choice, can only happen in the presence of good and evil. It is interesting to note in the creation story that until man was faced with his first encounter with the freedom of choice, everything was good. This was related in the statement that Adam and Eve felt no shame in their nakedness. Then we are told the story about the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which upon being eaten would mean death. God, of course, knew that his love and man's love in return could only result out of the freedom to choose. To choose to love or not to love. God, in the fruit of the tree of knowledge, gave man the choice. If man used this freedom to go against God's command, that decision would bring death to man's life of total goodness. The decision had to be man's. We are told that the serpent, also created out of the goodness of God, put man to the test. Man failed the test and discovered that by going against God's command, he also discovered evil. So what is evil? It is when mankind chooses not to follow God's command and thereby chooses to go outside of God's goodness. Later, this goodness was further defined in Jesus as love. Evil, then, is when you and I choose to violate love, the love of God, the love of our neighbors, the love of ourselves. Evil is when we put ourselves above and beyond everything and everybody else in order to maintain our egocentric world, the world of our inflated selves. Some would argue that man must have the freedom of self-preservation. I agree. But there is a line which should not be crossed, and that is when in our subjective minds, we corrupt or overextend the necessity for self-preservation. This is exactly what happened in the lives of those who chose to take the lives of others throughout these past years. Their views of self-preservation were so corrupted and influenced by the cruelty of others that they see those with whom they disagree as a threat to their life. Their overwhelming and ultimate love of self goes so far as to hate others, and thereby in reality ending up hating themselves. This overwhelming love of self-preservation leads to evil, since they no longer see any good left in life. Since there was no good, there was only evil. Therefore, philosophically, evil finds its definition only out of its relationship with good or God, and is a result of being created in the image of God with the freedom to choose. Martin Luther had an interesting way of putting this. He saw evil as the work of the devil, but acknowledges that evil is not the creation of the devil. He stated, "For the difference between God's work and the devil's work can be made most clear through these words, because the devil cannot create a substance, but can only corrupt the substance which God has created in an accidental way with God's permission." Luther therefore says that God's goodness was corrupted, and therefore that corruption was evil. The corruption was to choose not to follow his will. Why does God let these atrocities happen? He doesn't. He gave us the ultimate freedom of choice so that we may know his ultimate goodness and love. We are the ones to deny this goodness and love. We are the ones to choose sin and evil. I would be remiss to end here. For God gives us the solution to overcome such evil events and to bring healing. The solution was given after another horrific event, the crucifixion. The solution came when Jesus confronted Peter on that morning sometime after the resurrection. Three times he asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And three times Peter responded, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." And each time Jesus responded to him, "Then feed my sheep. Feed the flock." Herein lies the preventative and healing solution to evil. Love overcomes evil. It is us to love all of our fellow man so that they may not only experience our love, but the love of God. This is feeding his sheep. Paul wrote, Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. We must reach out to each other and let God's love flow through us to heal the broken in spirit, those who are confused, those who are lonely, those who are persecuted, and those who mourn. It is this love which conquers, and the goodness of God is realized. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. And now, for the rest of the story. This is a sad thing, the note. With only a few modifications, I gave the same sermon 12 years ago. What has changed? It's only gotten worse. Sadly, it is even more relevant today than it was then. Something to think about. Jesus said, "Do you love me? Feed my sheep." Amen.
Arises proclaim on faith of the words of the Nicene Creed.